I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Jules, we have our Champions League semi-finalists. Congratulations to Borussia Dortmund, to Bayern Munich. But because you guys are German, we're going to talk about you guys later in the show. We have to start about the clash of the superpowers. This is like an outdated WWE reference here. It's like when the mega powers exploded. Randy Macho Man Savage, which of course would be Manchester City, and Hulk Hogan, who of course would be Real Madrid. It went down to penalties. It couldn't have been closer in terms of the outcome. In terms of the way the game unfolded, maybe not so much.
No, not so much. But again, I think the game plan from Real Madrid was very much what we saw on the pitch, to try to score early like they did, and then manage space, defend quite deep, which I think they were very ready to go for and happy to do, really. I think they knew they could not match City with the ball in terms of even the intensity and the passing. That's not what they came for. They came for to do that kind of job. I don't think they came for penalties, but they certainly came for a narrow win, for example. I think the 1-0 win, had they seen that game out, winning 1-0 after that Rodrigo goal, they would have been very happy. In the end, they had to go through penalty. And being there at the stadium, I thought through the whole game, what was so obvious was how calm and confident and serene they were, even when De Bruyne scored, even when they were under pressure, even when De Bruyne missed his chance of Foden, all of that. It felt like they all almost knew they would qualify at some point, somehow.
You're that big on that? Because when I'm not a body language guy at all. I either misread it or generally think it's always made up after the fact. And before the penalties, the camera zoomed in on Lunin, and I said, I guarantee you, if they go out, somebody will go back and talk about what Lunin looks like. But instead, he was fine during the penalties.
I mean, I was quite close to where they were. They looked super confident to me, really. And I'm not saying that City were not. I'm just saying that Real Madrid looked really, really confident.
We often accuse, or not, actually, we don't. I don't, certainly. But the media narrative when City gets knocked out is that Pep is overthinking this. Pep is too clever by half. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it in the past, leaving out Aguero and Laporte at left back and this whole City narrative. He didn't overthink anything. This was about as bog standard a City side, at least in the first half, as you could see, in terms of put guys in their positions where they play the most and just let them execute and be better than the opposition.
Yeah, although we can talk about Foden again, playing really wide. And it's not just wide. It was literally on the line, on the touchline, which we've said many times, you and I, this is not his best position. He's a 10. He should play as a 10. But if you have De Bruyne there already, they can't both be playing there. Otherwise, Pep would have done it already.
Not unless John Stones is in the back line, but John Stones was on the bench.
Yeah, well, Akanji, to be fair, I thought Akanji played well the three-man role in the position play. The problem is Akanji is not as good technically as John Stones or another City player. And it felt often that it was him, you know, free with the ball, not really sure what to do with it. I was a bit disappointed by Foden's performance, certainly for the first hour. Then he moved more central, and I think that was better. I just don't know what the answer is. You have to play him. Can you play him centrally and De Bruyne? I don't think so. So you play him wide, okay, and do as best as you can. And so for him.
Well, he moved him more centrally. City scored. Yeah. And so maybe could there be an answer there?
Can he do that for the whole game? I don't know, because he also was to adapt to what Real Madrid were doing, which was playing really deep and just defending. That's all they did in that second half, really.
Is there any stain on that, on Carletto, for just defending in the second half?
No? You have to do what you've got to do to win those games. I just think that was the plan. And they just executed it perfectly. Rudiger, Nacho, it was not so pretty. 30% of the ball they have. I mean, they had two shots on target.
Conceded more than 30 shots.
Yeah. No, they were really under pressure a lot. But this is also, I think, what they do in this competition. They won it, remember, 2 years ago with a great goalkeeper and a striker that was walking on water in Courtois and Benzema. This time they might do it slightly differently. They don't have a number nine anymore. They have Bellingham. They've got other attributes, other qualities. I just thought that the way they were resilient was pretty impressive still.
Let's talk center forwards. Vinicius and Erling Haaland, of course, probably the two most hyped guys out there. Vinicius plays a big part in the opening goal. Haaland hits the woodwork. Other than that,
Were you a little bit underwhelmed by their performances, also the way Vinicius came off? Mean people say it's because so that he wouldn't have to take penalties.
Really? I thought he felt his hamstring. That's why I saw
him. Yeah, he touches his hamstring, yeah.
But maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I would trust Vinicius to take a penalty in the game.
So would I.
For Haaland, I don't know. He made his first pass after 37 minutes. Is this, he made two passes in the first half. I don't know. There's that header that goes on the bar. I'm not sure he could have done any better because he's already stretching and he's really high in the air. I don't know. I don't think he was as bad as in the first legs.
There's a guy I follow on Twitter who's very, very funny, and he's a big City fan. And he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something like, is it time to have a conversation about Haaland? And he basically said, I'm kind of getting tired of people saying, oh, but he ties up defenders. Now, obviously, they're defending deep and everything.
Yeah.
Is he a bit harsh? I mean, are we in a situation like
What do you want from him then? In a game like yesterday, what would you want from him?
Okay, but you can't tell me he can only operate in space, right?
No. I know. So yesterday, you want him to be more involved in your build-up play? Is that what it is?
But it's a fair point. No, I wouldn't, because I would want to keep him in the box and be there and tie up the defenders, which I guess is exactly what he did. But I think people might look at this and say, well, wait a minute. You're the best center forward in the world, or close to it, and you don't have an impact, or you don't, you're not decisive in these two games.
Yeah.
I think that is a fair accusation. Like, he's not the only one who wasn't decisive.
And, yeah.
You know, in the end, after the fact, we lionize him as a hero if they go through, because that's how public opinion works, isn't saying, oh, he tied up the defenders, whatever. But it does strike me to the point where he actually takes him off for... You know my thoughts on Julian Alvarez, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, really? What are you going to set piece late on, something like that? I don't know what message...
I don't know what people expect, though. That's the thing, because we say he hasn't been decisive. Just give me a chance that he had in the two games. Okay, the header on the bar yesterday, and that's even like a... It is a chance, but it's not a like clear-cut, super easy chance. So just give... No, you guys, but just somebody tells me, yeah, there he should have done better and should have scored. He had no opportunity to score in those two games, really. So then we're saying, okay, be involved in everything else then, if you can't score because there's not really any service.
Or take the two center backs out of the game.
Yeah.
Which you could argue that he largely did.
Yeah. And the way that City play with positional play, if he's trying to try to drop deeper, Pep will scream at him and say, this is not what I want you to do. This is not what you're doing in this team.
No, and there's
everybody
no need
in
for
this team has a position. This is what is called positional play. And the ball moves a lot. And the ball doesn't move to him until it's a chance for him to finish, to score. This is it. I don't think Pep really wants him in a game like this, again, at all, I'm saying. Want him to drop deeper, to be near Akanji and Rodri, and to try to take the ball and dribble past two people and shoot from 20 yards in the top corner. This one is not what he does, and two, I'm not sure that's what Pep wants him to do.
No, and especially not with Kevin De Bruyne out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Who, incidentally, I actually thought was exceptional. We can always
apart
find
from
fault.
The chance. Yeah, it's just one. He has to score that one.
We can always find fault with De Bruyne and stuff, but you realize when he's good, in my opinion, how much better he is than almost anybody else.
Yeah.
Who plays his...
The awareness of space is just ridiculous.
Can we show some love for Rudiger and Nacho? Yeah. Just as a reminder here about who these two guys are, right? Rudiger is a guy... I'm not saying he was overlooked when he was little, but, Stuttgart, Roma, Chelsea, does well.
And then disappears.
But, sorry?
There was a time at Chelsea where he was not even on the bench.
Yeah, because he was seen as purely physical, not good on the ball. Not only did both these guys take penalties, both these guys double-teamed Haaland during the game and, effectively kept him quiet, other than that. That header, both these guys are Madrid's reserve center backs, because if everybody's fit, it's Eder Militao and David Alaba.
Yeah.
Nacho, especially at his age, playing all season long. I mean, this is a guy who's like, oh, look, yeah, let's extend his contract by 1 year every year because, look, he can play all four positions.
Yeah.
And by the way, younger listeners, when a player is versatile and can play all four positions at the back, it generally means he's not that good, because if he were good, he would be playing the same position and the other people would be moving around him. Not an overall rule, but those versatile jack-of-all-trade players are generally the guys who do that to get playing time.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw on the night.
Amazing.
I mean, both of them.
Yeah.
Rudiger could have won the game with that late chance.
Then that's what makes Rudiger as well. Like, he just missed, hit it completely. He was just not ready for it. If he could score those, he would be the best defender in the world because technically he would be that good.
Right.
Instead, we saw the ball went on the M1.
So, M6. Shout out to the two of them. Yeah. Shout out to Toni Kroos as well. In a game with no Tchouaméni. And I really think this was, you know, of the people who are missing, okay, other than Courtois, but then Courtois has been out all year.
Yeah, so he's
kind of got used to it. I thought Tchouaméni's absence, I was like, all right, this is really going to be a problem. I thought Toni Kroos, while he was on the pitch, was fantastic.
Just calm and composed so much.
I thought Camavinga did his part too.
They ran a lot. Him and Valverde just had to be there to run and close passing angles. That's all they did.
But I know, since you like the bling, you want to talk about Bellingham's first touch.
So I watched him at, I was pitch side pretty much before the game, and I watched him at warm up, and I was literally, I think you could see, like, my heart was just pounding for him. It was just, I was like watching him simply doing, him and Toni Kroos were doing like diagonals and controlling the ball, and it was just so beautiful and perfect, and I loved Jude Bellingham so much. And then I thought people after the first leg were a little bit harsh, you know, talking about that he just didn't show up in that first leg, which he didn't. It was a tough game, though, to show up, I think, for everyone, because he was all so intense and everything. And I kind of knew there would be something special, I think, in this game from him at some point. And I thought that first touch, God, the ball is so high in the air, really high. I don't know if you could see on television, but being low at the ground and seeing it, it's so high. And I think in his mind, he already knew exactly what he was going to do next, so that his first touch had to come backwards in a way, although he was ahead of the ball. And I think this is the beauty of it. I think a lot of those players can control the ball even if the ball is high, right? I can probably still do it. But the way that he does it, going backwards, because he knows that then the ball goes towards the right for Valverde to then Vinicius to Rodrigo, is just absolute genius. I don't think I've seen a better first touch this season in any league,
I mean,
any player.
It was so good. When I saw it the first time, I thought, oh, he miscontrolled it. He was lucky. And then you watch it and you say, no, this is exactly what he's trying to do. His body shape is all wrong when he does it. He's going in different directions.
Yeah. So
this is like one of those moments of skill.
That's what Zidane would do.
Yeah, or Del Piero.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to talk about Bernardo Silva as well. Moved around the pitch. I don't think he had an impactful game. I was kind of surprised that he stayed on, given the options that they had on the bench. You know, Grealish didn't do too much necessarily, or wasn't. I think they dealt well with Grealish.
Yeah. Carvajal did well.
He put the work. He put in the work.
Yeah.
And sometimes one on one, you got to leave him out there. Bernardo Silva, not so much. And then it comes to the penalty. And they made a big deal out of this on television that I don't know how obvious it was in the stadium. And again, so you got initiated, you might wonder, really, in a Champions League semifinal? But the ball had gone into the stands and it wasn't coming back. And we had this moment where Orsato, the referee, is kind of like waving his arms and saying, guys, we need a ball here.
Yeah.
And it was probably just a few seconds. It felt like an eternity.
Yeah.
And then Bernardo Silva goes and takes the worst penalty of his career. So two questions. One is, are those two things linked? And B, what happened?
I think he had in his mind to do that, really. So anticipating.
What, chip the ball slowly in the middle?
So it's not even a chip, because it's just it's a pass that goes high. You see the ball going up. I think he just thinks that Lunin is going to dive right or left, low, you would think. So then that ball, you don't even have to put power in it. You just lift it with the inside of your foot and he's just going to go under the bar and that's it. He's going in. Except that Lunin, whether he saw it coming or not, because maybe Bernardo takes a lot of them centrally like that. I don't know. I haven't checked, to be fair.
Well, he doesn't take that many penalties anyway. So.
Yeah, true. But he was clearly waiting for it. Or he saw it coming because of the body, the way Bernardo was running and his body. I don't know. But one of those, which is a bit like when you try a Panenka and it doesn't work out. And by the way, this is not a Panenka.
No.
This is not a chip. This is not a Panenka. He just tried to hit it high and just under the bar with no power because he was anticipating the dive. When you do them well, or when he works, great. When he doesn't, yeah, you look
let
like
me
a,
send this
you
out
like
to
stupid
to people out there and commentators. You're right. This is not a Panenka. It's not like every time somebody chips the ball ends up being chipped. It's a Panenka. If you want to educate yourself on a Panenka, I'm not being boastful here, but I traveled all the way to Prague.
You did?
To speak to Mr. Panenka.
You did?
I showed him a whole bunch of Panenkas on YouTube. And I said, is this a Panenka? Is this not a Panenka? And he educated me exactly on what a Panenka is. So since he trademarked the name, he gets to decide what's a Panenka. And I'm sure, were he with us, he would say, no, that is most definitely, not a Panenka. Leave it on City.
Were you surprised that Modric missed his pen? Is it hard to take a pen when you haven't really been in the game? I know he came on and
played
a bit. He
had a good 20, 25 minutes.
Yes, but I mean, even when he played, they defended so much, you know, he was not involved that much.
Look, I mean, it's a penalty. I people say it's not a lottery. You can study for them. No, you can't. You can really just improve your odds. That's all you can do. So stuff happens. I don't think he was as impactful when he played, and maybe that stuck with him.
Yeah.
When he took the penalty, I was not surprised by when Ederson stepped up, because it does kind of send a message, I think, psychologically to the other team, right? When you look. Ederson, we know he's very good with his feet, but the dude never takes penalties except in shootouts. So I don't know whether this was pre-planned from Pep. I assume it was. It does send a message to the other team and maybe even to the other players. Like, it's still a goalkeeper taking it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Is nobody else better kind of thing?
Yeah, he was, what, third up, something like that? And then Rudiger and Nacho, I can't say enough about them converting their penalties in the way they did. In terms of City, back-to-back troubles would have been historic. I think there's nothing wrong in referencing it because, let's face it, they're favorites to win the FA Cup. They were favorites to win the Premier League. Yeah. They are favorites to win the Premier League, and they were favorites to win the Champions League. So it's entirely fair to do that. Would have been stratospheric in terms of events on the pitch. On paper, I would assume they're now even more favorites to win the Premier League. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, that's all they can. I mean, they will have the semi-final of the FA Cup at the weekend, but then they can focus fully on the Premier League. You don't need to rotate. You don't need to rest people because that's all you have to play for.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why only one team in the last 30 years have gone back-to-back in the Champions League, because it's that hard to win it again, even if you've won it once. So it was always going to be, I think, a long shot to keep that Champions League trophy. I guess they can be super disappointed the way it happened, though. But it's the way over the two legs.
Well, disappointed, but Pep said we couldn't have done anything more.
No, but you're still 3-2 up at some point away at the Bernabeu. If Valverde doesn't score that incredible volley, if you don't concede that third goal, you go home 3-2 lead. Might be different. Could you have avoided that Rodrigo goal? I mean, it's a terrible... We haven't touched on it too much. But okay, the Bellingham touch is great. But after that, the way Walker covers Vinicius on that ball and is... obviously onside, even the way Bellingham is onside and the way he's allowed to let the ball go down. You know, we always say never let the ball bounce like that. They do. So it's a terrible goal to concede, really. Rodrigo hits it with his shin and then he's got a rebound. So
there was a bit of fortune in that.
Yeah, of course. So I don't know. I would think that, and then you lose on pens, you know, in your
You can always second guess. Yeah. If they go out, Real Madrid can also second guess too about the Rudiger miss and whatnot.
True. There just was not much between the two.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City and Real Madrid. Yeah. Let's talk about the other game, which is the one I'm sure you want to talk about, Jules.
Vamos!
Paris Saint-Germain coming from behind. 2 goals down on aggregate to knock out Barcelona. Now, very acrimonious the way this happened.
Yeah.
I will quickly give you my quick summation of this.
Gone.
Okay? Obviously, the Araujo red card made a big difference, and we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, Barcelona are out because of 3 massive individual errors. So 2 individual ones, 1 collective. Hey? And that's Cancelo losing Dembele on the first goal. Yeah. And then losing him again a few minutes later when Dembele puts it wide.
Yeah.
On the second goal, defending too deep, the defender's not stepping out. Gundogan referenced Lewandowski. Fine, I'm going to reference Pedri. I love Pedri. Pedri, if you watch the replay, Pedri is hiding behind Asensio.
Yeah.
Dude, just step in front of him. You're right in front of the keeper. The guy's going to be offside on the shot. I'm talking about the Vitinha shot here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally, Cancelo's massive brain fart, right? Yeah. The fourth goal was garbage time. You know, not really relevant. And those are the same 3 big individual errors that cost Paris Saint-Germain
exactly
in the first leg.
Yeah.
So if those net out, do we have a Paris Saint-Germain deserving of their place?
Yeah, I mean, I just think for the character that they showed in that second leg in a very hostile environment. I mean, I know it's not
the intimidating Montjuic.
And trust me, I was sat with 2 of my children with the Barcelona fans, and it was very intimidating. And credit to Barcelona fans, the atmosphere was outstanding. It was amazing.
I mean, credit to them because for those who don't know, Barcelona play at the Camp Nou. The atmosphere at the Montjuic has been criticized all season long. Yeah. Supposedly fans don't want to go there. On this night...
Incredible. Really incredible. Everything. I mean, they got the wrong bus at the start. So they threw stones at their own bus instead of the PSG one, which because they had so much flair, they could not really see. I mean, I don't know. But it was great. And PSG go a goal down when they started really well again. They go a goal down because Lamine is that good, and then Rafinha gets a little bit lucky, and then you're thinking, uh-oh, this is not looking good. There is no reason or explanation or justification for Araujo, who is one of the best defenders in Europe, to go and make that foul on Barcola. There's just nothing. There is nothing at all. He doesn't need to. I even think that Ter Stegen could get to the ball before Barcola, even if Araujo doesn't touch him. It's the most stupid and ridiculous foul that you can make, that let your team down after 29 minutes in a game of this caliber against a team that is already very good and I started that game well, and then you let your team with 10 men. And after that, obviously, you could feel it straight away in the stadium that Barca were there for the taking. Their head dropped. The fans had dropped as well. The atmosphere went from like this super high, incredible atmosphere to like, uh-oh, this is not good. Now we are in fear. And at halftime, I saw a former PSG player sat next to us, not far from us. And he said, they're there for the taking. And if PSG don't mess this up, if they stay composed and serious, don't make a mistake, they're going to roll them over. And that's exactly what happened. And I know games can go on a mistake like that, but that one from Araujo at this level is really, really bad.
What struck me too about what happened afterwards, and we'll go back to the Araujo thing, is Barcelona decided to, I think, effectively sit deep.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine for certain clubs, Juventus of the early Allegri era and whatever else. This is not something they're comfortable doing. If you're going to do that, you need to have the out ball to play on the counter. And effectively, at that point, you only had that with Rafinha. It's not like Lewandowski's going to run away from anybody.
No, but why did he take Lamine Yamal off?
That's the question. I mean, I think I'm fine with keeping Rafinha on, but then you make a big call. Then you have to take off Pedri, right? That would have been the other obvious guy to take off.
Yeah.
That's a big call to make. Well, so,
or Lewandowski.
That's an even bigger call to make. I'm not going to fault Xavi, because look, I read a whole column about this. I love Xavi. I thought he was wrong to say that he was going to leave at the end of the season. Now I'm thinking, you know what? If you can't control yourself, if you get yourself sent off in these games, if I'm not blaming this on Xavi on his own, but there's a total lack of leadership from the bench. And, you know, after he got sent off, the brother got a yellow card. The goalkeeping coach got sent off. Sergio Roberto, stupidly suspended for the game, gets sent off too.
Yeah.
That was a big letdown.
Yeah,
but
it was.
We're gonna
lost
break
their nerves.
Right? I don't want to twist a knife on Xavi, but he's now been sent off three times this season in his entire playing career for Barcelona, Spain, and whatever team he coached in Qatar. Or played for in Qatar for 4 years, he'd only been sent off twice.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a level of emotional investment which does not allow him to think clearly. And look, it's not just him, right? We've seen this before. We've seen this with Luis Enrique when he was there.
Yeah.
And especially with Pep. Yes, even Pep. Remember, way back when, in his early years, he's like winning Champions League titles, and then at the end of the season saying like, no, I don't know if I'm going to be back next year because it's too exhausting and takes too much of a toll on my health, my family, all this stuff. Hey, look, men's mental health. I completely respect that.
Mm.
On this occasion, he was out of control. And I think with more leadership from the bench, because Barcelona created chances after that.
Yeah.
It's not like through the game. It's not like they were, while they did defend deep, it's not Paris Saint-Germain. We're not invulnerable.
No, for sure. There's one for Rafinha. There's a couple for Lewandowski that made the wrong decision.
The Gundogan one as well. So the chances were there. And so I felt, you know, you've shown you can play. You've shown you can hang with these people. You've shown that maybe Lucho got a few things wrong as well in the way they set up. And so just to leave your team like this 11 minutes in the second half,
I know, yeah. I thought he let them down. And also all the thing about the referee. And I think the referee made the right calls. I think it's a penalty, like you said, Cancelo. Again, talked about Araujo. Why is Cancelo tackling Dembele when Dembele is going towards the...
It's very simple here. There's a parallel universe, and I tweeted this out, so I'm going to repeat this. There's a parallel universe where Alejandro Balde isn't injured.
Yeah.
Cancelo does not start this game, certainly not at left back. And they go through. There's no way... There's no way Balde makes that stupid tackle that Cancelo makes. There's no way Balde doesn't
make another mistake.
Lose Dembele. I mean, no, but it just doesn't happen.
New, though. Yeah, but it's not new that Cancelo can't really defend. He did well in the first leg. Him and Kubasi on the left-hand side, not so much this time. And what I like about Ousmane Dembele, the level of abuse, and booing and whistling every time he touched the ball was just... Again, incredible. And expected, because that's what we knew this was going to happen. Barcelona fans and people in Barcelona were not happy with the way he celebrated his goal in the first leg. The Catalan media were going...
The way he left the club, too.
The way he left the club, but also the way that he celebrated, not showing gratitude and all of that. So they went really hard on him in their columns and everything. That's fine. And he didn't start the game well. He tripped on the ball. He missed passes, all of that. But what I like about him is that he just keeps on going and going and going. Even if it's not looking that it's going to be his night, he keeps on going and going and going. And I think that's what also helped this team, because you needed we talked about leadership for Barcelona. You needed big players in there, you know, not to be intimidated, not to go your head down after you concede the first goal. Even when you miss chances, you keep going. You needed Mbappe, you needed Dembele, you needed Marquinhos. Those kind of guys. And I think on that level, certainly, even if he was not perfect, they delivered.
Let's talk Mbappe. Were you expecting more?
No. For me, he did what he had to do. He was very good the whole week leading to the second leg. He was very present and available, which hasn't been all the case all the time this season. There were times where he just didn't really... feel like he was involved in things in the dressing room, certainly. Since between the first leg and the second leg, he was there all the time. He kept saying, we're going to do this, we're going to win. Him and Luis Enrique seemed really on the same page. Enrique said something really interesting after the first leg in the dressing room. He said to the players, he said, listen, I'll tell you something. We will go there and they will make mistakes. He said, forget about what happened tonight, we lost, but it would be their turn to make mistakes at Montjuic. And that's exactly what happened. And I thought Mbappe was very good in the leadership role that he had between the two legs. But let's not get too down or too high either. Let's not be too confident. PSG had never, ever overturned a tie after losing the first leg at home in their history in Europe. And I thought he was really good. And then during the game, he scored the penalty when you need big cojones to do at that time. You do. It was a really, like, the atmosphere was, at that time of the game, okay, it's massive. Then he scored his second goal. I thought at times he stretched the game well. He was always a threat. I think Kubasi and Inigo Martinez, you know, had to watch him carefully. He dropped when he had to do. He calmed everything down. He set the tempo. No, I like the way he plays.
There's a question about Paris Saint-Germain and those talking points that we do for the website.
Yeah.
This perception, this narrative, and I do think there is something to this, that in breaking up the Neymar-Messi-Mbappe partnership, right, with Neymar and Messi moving on, bringing in a coach like Lucho, who, you know, frankly, you can like him, you can dislike him, but Lucho's the kind of guy who's like, oh, I don't like the way things are going here. I'm done. He's the guy who's going to drop everything and walk out.
Yeah.
He's not going to take it. He's like, I don't need this. I'm Lucho. I've won the treble. I'm not going to accept any interference from upstairs, from outside. And I'm going to go with younger players who, let's face it, are more pliable, right? They're more likely. If I tell Warren Zaire-Emery to, you know, bang his head against the wall, he will probably do it for a while. You know, whereas some of the players, you ask Messi to do that, Messi's going to say, hey, Lucho, why don't you show me first how it's done, right? Is this more of a collective team ethos, Paris Saint-Germain? And if it is, because people say, oh, it's the secret to their success. Well, if it is, why didn't we see it so much in the group stage of the Champions League when they obviously came within a disputed penalty of going out? Or indeed in Ligue 1, where they have fewer points than they did at this stage last season.
Yeah, but you can play more as a team and have less points than the season before when you had Messi in your team and Neymar not so much. But I don't know. I just think they're not perfect. They don't do everything perfectly. But one thing for sure, that everything they do is as a team.
More
so than before. It used to be a sum of individuals. Even some of the players would say it. You could see it in the dressing room. You had little clans, which is fine. A lot of dressing rooms it's normal that between, I don't know, Argentines, you hang out together. It's just normal. But at times in Paris before, it felt a little bit
disjointed.
Yeah, and toxic sometimes. And I think this time, the good thing about Luis Enrique, as you said, Gabby, is just that this is what he does. There's just no star, there's no status. If he wants to take Kylian Mbappe off after 55 minutes, he does it and nobody says anything, and that's right. If he wants to start Zaire-Emery at 17 or 16 and play him every single game and trusting him, that's fine. He does what he wants.
Or leave out Kolo Muani and Gonzalo Ramos and Luis Campos as friends.
All the expensive signings, he doesn't care at all. And I think that's the big change. And that's what they needed. Is it enough to go and win the Champions League? I don't know. They're going to win the league. They might do the double domestically if they win the French Cup final. The Champions League, I don't know. But I think you have more chance in this day and age to win the Champions League as a team than just because you've got 11 good individuals who don't actually play as a team. And just to finish on that, the fourth goal, as you said, is garbage time. It doesn't matter so much. But the fact that Mbappe is there tackling the ball in his own box on that pass from Gundogan towards Fermin, and then obviously sprinting is at the other end, I can guarantee you Mbappe would not have done that last season or the season before, and neither would have Neymar or Messi.
That does not reflect on where he was a year ago.
Exactly.
Let me just leave it, put it that. Yeah. Final thing, Gigi Donnarumma, big save. Little step towards redemption for the first time?
Yeah. And you know what? I wanted to say to you, I was with him after the game and he wanted his dad to come in the ground to go in the dressing room. And the mean people at Barcelona, who, like, I don't know, the stadium people, didn't let Gigi's dad, his poor dad, to come in. I know, I thought that was really, really, I was like, come on, man. And Gigi was fuming. It's one of those. He had a good game. The save that he had to make, he made. He showed some good leadership and good character. Well done. And again, the first leg, I think it was not just on him, but it's good that a week later he had recovered.
Hope you're listening, Montjuic Stadium security. All right, enough, Marta. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Joshua Kimmich, bullet header gives Bayern the goal they need to advance past Arsenal and into the semi-final. Jules, some love for Tommy G here? Or are you going to go with the whole Arsenal inexperienced young team trope?
No, but there's a bit of that, of course. I think when you buy a Munich and you're used to it and you've got players who've been there many times before, it helps for sure. I just like Tomiti's plan tactically in this game to play Guerrero where he did with Mazraoui to nullify Bukayo Saka, which worked really, really well. I like the way they defended when they decided to play deeper. And at times I thought they committed players going forward quite well too, because they could have scored more than one goal. And Arsenal had a couple of decent moments. If Martinelli takes that one better and nil-nil in the first half after a half hour, maybe the whole game is different. I think there's a lot to learn from Arteta and Arsenal from this performance from Tuchel and his Bayern player. This is not a good Bayern team. We've said that many times. Tuchel has struggled at times this season. But when it matters in a game like this, but also even, for example, the first game against Bayer Leverkusen that they drew 2-2, they can also respond. And it won't be easy for Real Madrid against them in the semi-final at all. But they did the job very clinically, I thought, in that second leg.
If we are going to nitpick here, this is an Arsenal team where just about everybody was available. Yeah. This was a Bayern team without Gnabry, without Coleman. Yeah. Sané was clearly injured. I was a little bit disappointed that after sort of first 20-25 minutes, when it became obvious that Bayern seemed to be almost like they were playing for penalties at home, I thought Arsenal was like, all right, you're going to sit back. Well, we're not going to take chances and try to win this game. Or we're going to be more conservative, right? Yeah. I thought maybe that's when you go for the jugular, because I don't know that the threat on the out ball is going to be there. I don't know if they're going to be able to counterattack that well. Maybe with hindsight, that's something which Arteta might regret. Yeah. They gave it a good run. But yeah, well done, Bayern. Hmm.
Sticking with Bayern, Gab, as well, Fabrizio Romano and others are reporting that Julian Nagelsmann is now the top of their list to return to the club after the Euros. Is that a good idea?
You know my thoughts. He should have never sacked the guy.
I know.
I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know if it's actually the ultimate sign of humility to make yourself feel stupid or look stupid by saying, oh, look, we fired him after giving him this enormous contract at the bail of this compensation, but we could admit our mistakes. Julian, come back. The other thing with this is the timing of it. So if you confirm this before the Euros and Germany stink it up, which is entirely possible with this German team.
Of course.
Then he's going to be totally undermined and he will have missed the preseason. So I think you need to be very, if you wait until after the Euros, well, dude, somebody's got to do preseason training and somebody's got to prepare.
And it's not much because the final is on the
14th of July.
So their preseason will start on the 5th of July maybe. So there's a week where he can't be there.
Reaper, there's no manager.
One of his boys can do it.
Borussia Dortmund are through with a 4-2 win over Atletico Madrid. Jules, so much for the cliche whereby Dortmund are flaky and spursy and Atleti gritty and tough. Well, I mean, the Atleti cliche is gone a long time ago.
Long time ago. We kind of knew that. Even at 2-2, you knew that they could still concede and they did. I mean, well done to Terzic and this Dortmund team, to be fair, because I didn't think they could put a performance like that. Really, and score 4 goals. The Füllkrug header is a magnificent header, really magnificent. The way they went, the intensity, the fan support behind them, absolutely amazing.
And my man Ian Matson getting it done again.
He's made them a better team, there's no doubt. Mm-hmm. And Gab, you may have noticed, but there are no Premier League clubs in the Champions League semi-final for the first time since 2020, and only, I think, the second time since 2016 or something like that. And with Liverpool and West Ham needing comebacks and big ones to stay alive in the Europa League, it looks increasingly like Italy and Germany and not England will have 5 teams in the Champions League next season.
So I know a lot of people who, because you've got these Premier League fanboys out there, you have automatically the equivalent, which is just Premier League haters out there. And people were loving the Schadenfreude last night. Augie as well. It is a fair point. They have more resources than everybody else. They should be doing better. On the other hand, I look at the margins. I don't think, performance in European competitions is the best benchmark of a league, or does it mean that there's anything particularly wrong with the league? So no, I don't think that this is necessarily a big deal. If it becomes a habit, I do think that if they miss out on the 5th place, and they probably will, then all of a sudden this Aston Villa Spurs battle for 4th, that becomes massive. Really, really exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
More Dortmund. There's plenty of speculation that with Jason Wilcox likely to join Manchester United and Erik ten Hag possibly being elsewhere next season, Jadon Sancho could be back in the fold at Old Trafford, since obviously he worked with Wilcox in the City youth team back in the day.
That's right.
What's your take, Jules?
I mean, if you bring him back, it has to be in an environment where he can shine again.
Meaning no Ten Hag there.
Well, no Ten Hag to start with. Don't go and send him train with the under 21s or something like that, because there's a player in there for sure. We know it. We can see it with Dortmund, maybe not consistently enough, but at times Wilcox knows him really well. Whoever is the manager coming, if Ten Hag is not there, I think if Ten Hag stays, there's no way back. I don't think they would want to work
but
with
Rashford. But Rashford, Garnacho.
Yeah, but that's also the problem. And they will need money. They will need to, I think, maybe to sell him for that reason. Yeah. So it'd be very interesting to see. I'm not sure he wants to go back anywhere, maybe.
I don't know who's going to give you serious money for Jadon Sancho unless he takes a huge pick.
You have to take your cut. Chelsea destroyed Everton on Monday night, Gab, winning 6-0, and Cole Palmer scored 4 goals. Gab, you were there. Were Chelsea good or Everton an absolute shambles? Or both?
I think a bit of both in the first half. In the second half, the game just kind of derailed a little bit. By the way, Palmer could have had 5 because he had one which the XG was like 0.9.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Palmer has scored 20 Premier League goals this season. He's level with Haaland. Watkins, incredible. One behind. Yeah. And then you've got Isak Salah and my man Dominic Solanke, another former Chelsea striker, on 17. Yeah, Everton were really bad. They were disappointing. Everything went wrong for them. Chelsea's patterns of play actually worked. There was no Enzo Fernandez.
No.
Wonder if the two things are somehow related. But yeah, it would have been really good for Pochettino, Jules. Except, man, he was furious after the game with Nico Jackson and Noni Madueke. Now, if you haven't seen this, go check it out. It's on the internet. They squabbled over who would take that penalty in the second half, despite the fact that Cole Palmer, neither one of these two mopes, is a designated penalty taker. It looked so bad, stealing the ball from each other.
Pushing each other. Like, listen, what I don't understand, because Madueke is the first one, to be fair, to take the ball. The foul is not even on him. The foul is on Palmer first, and then goes on to him. He's also down. He takes the ball saying, no. And you can read on his lips, say, I'm taking this. Palmer is staying away from it. Nico Jackson comes in and said to Madueke, no, give it to me. I'll take it. And she's like, listen, there is a guy that you've all been told he takes the penalty, even if he scored 10 goals already before, unless he's ready to give it to you. And that comes from Cole Palmer himself. If not, it's his. This is his. I mean, Sterling tried before. And Enzo had to come and say, like, come on, he's the penalty taker, he's designated. What are Madueke and Nico doing? I don't understand.
You know, Pochettino says if it happens again, they're out of the team. You know what? What I would do?
Too right.
Out of the team now.
Yeah.
You especially, Madueke.
Yeah.
I don't need to see this nonsense from you. You, Jackson, unfortunately, I need you because we're stupid morons and we let Broja go. We don't have any other strikers. But seriously, no, you have to take a stand. It has got to be.
I know.
And did you notice that Gallagher only, who's the captain on the day, only gets involved at the end after Thiago Silva walks the length of the pitch coming over? Gallagher's like, why? Why am I doing this?
I know.
I mean, honestly, I don't want to be like those old guys. Oh, on John Terry's day, they would have kept them up the backside. Yeah. John Terry would have hogtied them and put them in the boot of a car, which is what they probably deserve.
Yeah.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. And more Everton as well, Gabby. They filed their appeal over that second point deduction of 2 points that came a few days ago. And there's a chance we won't get a resolution until May 24th, which is 5 days after the end of the season. That's ridiculous.
It is pretty ridiculous, especially when they're just arguing over accounting. Everton are also arguing, oh, maybe we can have the, take one of the points and be penalized, start next season at -1. Dude, worry about staying up before you worry about those things. It's going to be very, very weird this year, but that's the way it is. People got to get used to it. None other than French President Emmanuel Macron weighed in on Kylian Mbappe and whether he'll play at the Olympics. Jules, I'm going to guess you agree with whatever Macron says.
I agree. I agree in the sense that I would love Kylian to be there. Of course,
exactly did he say?
It's the Olympics in his hometown. He wants to be there. But now I think there's a point where Real Madrid have said already it's not going to happen, right?
Wait, how can you say this when he hasn't signed for them yet?
Well, because he's going to.
Okay.
He can't sign for them before playing the Champions League final against them if that happens. Do you see what I mean? So,
God, I hadn't even thought of that scenario.
But do you see, I think there's a point where Macron, my dad, I mean, anybody in France has to just say, listen, it would have been great for him to wear the shirt in the Olympics in Paris. It's just not going to happen. Let's all move on. Let's focus on who else could come in, whether it's, I don't know, Griezmann, Lloris, Saliba. I don't know who Thierry Henry wants, really, after Kylian, but it's not going to happen. Because it looks like we, you know, we're begging now. We're like on our knees saying, like, please, Real Madrid, please, Florentino, leave him staying with us in the summer, which we know is not going to happen as much as I would love it. And one of my other boys, Paris born and bred as well, Evan Ndika, Gabby Skedos, all when he collapsed on the pitch in the Udinese-Roma game on Sunday. But now he's left the hospital and doctors have ruled out a heart problem.
Yeah, so obviously this game was abandoned with the score 1-1 with about 20 minutes to go. It will be replayed at some point. Yeah, they've done a bunch of tests. Is that there's no heart thing. They, what they've diagnosed is a collapsed lung from in an earlier incident. He got hit in a collision. Yeah, he got hit in the ribs. And that's what caused it. So all these people, myocarditis, vaccines, all this nonsense that people really should know better put out there. No, thankfully, it's only collapsed lung. But yeah, on the day, we're happy he's well. And or he's better anyway. It might take some time to recover. On the day, yeah, it was really, really scary watching MTV. Arsenal and Barcelona getting knocked out means Salzburg will be the 12th and final European to play in the 2026 FIFA Club World Cup. Jules, some will be surprised by this, even though we've told you before what the criteria are. Can you just remind people why Salzburg?
I might need your help on this one because it's the coefficient.
Over the last four years.
4 years, five. I thought it was 5 years of how well you've done in European competitions.
That's right.
That takes you to the best 12 teams. So it's not just on this season. Right. It's not just on last season.
Yeah. Salzburg aren't actually 12th, but there's a cap of two teams
per country.
Per country, unless they've won the Champions League. Champions League winners get in.
Yeah.
And so this is why had Arsenal or Barcelona or Atletico Madrid are going in because they have a higher coefficient than Barcelona anyway. But had Arsenal or Barcelona, they could have kind of jumped the queue.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And so look, there's nothing wrong. Bit of variety at the World Cup.
It's not bad. Gab, an arbitration court in Italy has ruled on the dispute between Juventus and Cristiano Ronaldo. We've mentioned it many times on the show before. And they owe him 10 million euros. Or just
I can't read 9,774,166 euros and 66 cents.
Yeah, every penny. It's not good news for a Juve
club. No, it's a ton of money. They only have themselves to blame. So basically, what happened here, I'm going to summarize this, giving you the point of view of Cristiano's lawyers, who won, so I'm guessing it's probably something close to the truth. They back during COVID, the club said, the player said, hey, we need to all take voluntary pay cuts of, you know, X number of months and so on. They took a certain number of pay cuts and then secretly orchestrated by your buddy Giorgio Chiellini said, hey, guys, let's pretend we're taking another pay cut, but don't worry, the club will pay us back in bonuses next season. So a bunch of people agreed to do this.
Yeah, to help out.
Help out. Essentially deferred wage. Cristiano, of course, ended up moving to Manchester United. They're like, oh, Cristiano's not here. Well, he doesn't get his bonus then. So I can see his argument. I can totally see his argument. They have to pay interest on top of it. I'm sure their Juve's lawyers came up with some complicated legal argument about why. I mean, the fact that the whole agreement was illegal in the first place, you got in trouble with your shareholders, maybe you might not want to go there. Jules, having talked Ronaldo, let's talk Messi.
Yeah.
Ryan Messi, that is. He's 16, turns 17 next month, plays for Dijon in the French third division. Why is everybody so excited about him when he's played two games in the third division?
Because he's a wonderful talent, Gabby, Paris born and bred.
This is why we're talking about
him. No, of course. If you watch youth football, for example, at international level, you would have seen him destroying England last month with the French under-17 team. Super talent, really, and Dijon need to sell, unfortunately, to balance their book. They're hoping to get around 400 million euros, which is, for example, what Manchester
United... Did you say 400 million euros?
Did I say 400 million? Oh, my God.
My goodness.
Sorry about that. 4 million euros, okay. Which is what, for example, Socho got from Manchester United for Willy Kambola that we see now in the Premier League when he was 16. There's a lot of Bundesliga clubs that are quite keen on him, like Leipzig, of course, those kind of clubs, Leverkusen too. English clubs like him a lot. The problem is with the new rules at 16 or 17, they can't sign him now. But he will be leaving soon for a top, top club.
Why doesn't he just go to Strasbourg and join the Chelsea queue?
I think he wants to go abroad. I think he wants to go abroad.
All right.
So it'd be interesting to see. And you dissed him before we were preparing for the show when we were preparing it anyway. So now I expect his trajectory to go down massively. But
okay. Well, no, I just remember sitting in the series studio with you and you telling me about another young French phenom named Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan Cherki.
Yeah.
Who I liked for about 5 minutes when the story was out that said like, oh, look, he can come play for Italy. You know.
Yeah,
exactly. Ryan Cherki was better at his age than this guy.
Oh, sure. They're different profiles.
But this guy's named Messi, so we're talking about him. Okay, got it.
Gab, Inter need to find nearly $300 million between now and next month, that is next month, to repay a loan. Otherwise, something called Oaktree Capital takes over the club. Should Inter fans be concerned?
Yes, well, Oaktree Capital, they're already minority shareholders. They loan the club. The club's owner, Zhang, $300 million, and now they need to, it's coming due, plus interest, and they have to repay it. Otherwise, because Zhang put up his 68.5% of the club shares as collateral for this loan, then they would, if he defaults, then they're going to take over the loan.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. He's not going to default. He just needs to find somebody else loan him money.
Can he find that?
I think he will because Inter are in a better position now than they were when he took the money in the first place. The only thing is interest rates are higher now than they were back then. So those two things might balance out. If it doesn't happen, the fact that Oaktree already own a chunk of the club, I think is also pretty significant. Zhang said, I will not be selling. So onwards and upwards for now. It's not a disaster situation.
No, yeah.
It would be better if you could just find the $300 million. I don't know. The Suning's fortunes aren't what they were, but you just pay off the loan, move on. Former Arsenal and Milan chief executive Ivan Gazidis, former MLS deputy commissioner as well.
Our friend.
He's in talks to buy Saint-Étienne, one of France's historic clubs, and a big rival to Olympique Lyon, who's owned by
John Textor.
There you go. We got the John Textor reference in. Jules, I know Gazidis was very well compensated for his work at Arsenal and even more so at Milan.
Yeah.
Surely he's not doing this all by himself.
No,
right?
Not all by himself. But he's like.
He doesn't have that much money.
No, not that much money. They value the club around, I don't know, it's hard to tell, 60, 80, maybe million euros, maybe a bit less. Now they're in the second division, maybe 40. I think they're very open to sell now. The two owners who've owned the club for a long time now. And I think they like the project that he has with his consortium. There's another guy. It looks like it's a two horse race between Gazidis and his people and a French guy who created a successful online selling website. So I don't know where they will go. They can potentially go back to Ligue 1 this season because they are third in the table. They're doing much better now. There's a lot of drama at Saint-Étienne always, but they have maybe the best fans in the country or one of the best sets of fans in the country. It's quite incredible. It's a very historical club. Like you said, I think there's a lot of value in there to go and do something great with that club. So let's hope that Gazidis, or if he's the other French guy.
For those who don't know, Saint-Étienne, historically, like a major powerhouse. They're kind of like the equivalent of what we see here in England. We have all those clubs that, you know, like Blackburn or whatever that won.
Or like a Newcastle.
The only thing is, Saint-Étienne's not a big place. Lyon is up the road, which is a big city.
Yeah, Lyon is the biggest city for sure.
I mean, what's realistic for them? Become a mid-table club?
When Galtier, in the last decade, they finished fourth, fifth, sixth. They could be a top eight club, without a doubt. They've got great resources. They've got a big stadium, loads of season tickets. There's potential there. to grow to a certain extent, obviously. But there's something great to do there, I think, for a project with consistency and the right direction. I think there's something really interesting to do there. Roma have announced that Daniele De Rossi will stick around as manager of the team next season too. That makes sense for you, Gab?
Yeah, of course, they announced it just before their big Europa League return quarterfinals clash against Milan, where game kicks off in a few hours. It totally makes sense. He's not very expensive. He loves the club. He has not put a foot wrong PR-wise since he took over. And he took over the team after Jose Mourinho was sacked in ninth place. And they're in the top five now.
Yeah.
And he's generally a very likable guy.
Massive.
So I think it makes a lot of sense for them, and it does mean that some of those high priced players that were brought in under Mourinho, like Romelu Lukaku, will probably leave in the summer and come back and become Chelsea's problem once again. But you know what? After Nico Jackson gets taken behind the woodshed, Lukaku will have a chance to win the job of starting center forward.
Very true.
Ada Hegerberg has signed a new deal with Lyon. Jules, obviously I didn't see her at the World Cup. Is she still the best in the world?
It's a good question, Gav. She obviously came back. Yeah, she obviously came back from a very nasty injury. Yeah, I think she can become again the best and be at the level of a Sam Kerr, for example, just to name one.
Because there is no outright number one in women's football right now. There's no consensus. Right?
No, I guess Aitana Bonmati is the best player in the world, but it's just I was trying to find someone in the position of Ada Hegerberg, and Bonmati isn't. But if you take out Bonmati, I don't know, she still has to prove again that she can be the top. So let's see in the Champions League semi-final against PSG, for example, home and away, how she plays, what she does. I think it was very important for Lyon to tie her up to a new deal, though, because I think she was tempted to go to the US, maybe until 2027, because she still can be the leader and she still can be. I think she still can take this team forwards a lot. So I'm glad for her because she deserved that, and she's been there 10 years now. It's a very long time. She arrived really young.
Just 18 when she came in.
Yeah. More Everton as well. The prospective owner, 777, got an extension from the Premier League like they wanted, Gab, to repay the $200 million
loan,
that they borrowed. But it's not really the extension they wanted.
No, they want a loan through the end of the season. Yeah. They only, apparently, reportedly, it's a loan of just a few weeks.
Wow.
According to the reporting also, but don't worry. Once you pay this loan back, we're not going to stand in your way. I don't know. This is a freak show. There's no possible reason why really? This story keeps going and
I know,
going.
Man.
You either have the money or you don't have the money.
And if you don't, just get out.
I just feel bad for Everton because our Everton fans who've been inflicted and put through this whole thing. I'm assuming that they can repay it. But it's also not that easy. They're going to have to liquidate assets elsewhere, I assume. I'm assuming they can't just go and borrow money from somebody else, repay this loan to MSP Capital and others, and then say, oh, look, Premier League, we repaid the loan. Yeah, but you've taken out
another loan.
It's like those people rotating credit card debt. Jules, you love your father-son stories.
Oh, I do.
You must be delighted that Romario is reportedly ready to play again at age 58. For America, who are a club from Rio de Janeiro, who are in the second division.
Yeah, second division.
It's a club he supports, and the club for which his son, Romarinho, by the way, this is the other Romarinho, not the one who plays in Saudi. He only has one son, right? They're not both his kids, right?
No.
Sorry, but what kind of a weirdo are you? I'm sorry, I know these are all nicknames in Brazil. Pardon the digression,
but maybe
right? The other one is 3 years older, I believe, right? Why would you choose to call yourself Romarinho when you know there's a real Romarinho who really is Romario's son?
Because I guess, I don't know, maybe...
That's kind of weird, right?
Maybe the other Romarinho, his dad is also...
Romario?
Yeah, something.
Except he's like a plumber or something?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Romario retired when he was 42, so that's 16 years ago. I don't know if you've seen him recently. I mean, he's not in fitness.
He's
not in shape to play football. He can finish still, because I saw a game where he played 7-a-side, and the finish was amazing. But he was like literally walking football.
I think even in 1994, when he was in the World Cup, he did not look very in shape.
True.
So and he doesn't run much to begin with.
So I don't know what kind of level the Rio de Janeiro...
Second division.
Second division is. Yeah. Like, of the state of Rio, I would suspect he's still can, he's still, it would still be quite competitive.
Yes, you know, so.
So I don't know, maybe he just comes on late against a team that plays really deep and he just hangs out in the box to have like one touch there. I don't know. I want to, let me know if there's a stream. Let us know if there's a stream on YouTube somewhere we can watch it. I would pay even if there's some subscription. I want to see Romario play again, obviously. Growing up, he was one of my heroes. So, but there he is, come on. I know he wants to play with his son. It's a bit like LeBron and, well, and his son, but at least the age gap is not that much between LeBron and Bronny than it is between Romarinho and Romario.
It's funny, fathers and sons playing together. The first time, I'm sure it must have happened at some point. The only time it came on my radar was, remember Ider Gudjonsson?
Yeah, Gudjonsson. His father, of course, national team, Arnar,
was a legendary Icelandic player. But I believe Ider made his debut coming on for Arnar, and I appreciate all the symbolism in that.
Yeah.
But dude, you don't get to play together. I didn't get that.
I agree. Guy, remember the $2.5 billion that Todd Boehly and his mates paid to buy Chelsea from Roman Abramovich, and which was supposed to help victims of the war in Ukraine? Whatever happened to that money? Because usually you give us an update every month or two or so.
It's still sitting in the bank account. This is now like in the House of Lords. There's a dispute about whether it should be used to help victims on both sides, whether it can only be spent in Ukraine, whether you can spend it on Ukrainian refugees elsewhere. I find it, frankly, completely appalling that they didn't figure this out. Also, let's face it, they expropriated the club from Abramovich, right?
Yeah.
So they told Abramovich, hey, Abramovich, you're going to sell the club because we've got sanctions or whatever, and we'll take the money and we'll give it to a charitable foundation. And look, here are the bylaws, and they're going to state out, and you're going to like it, Roman, and you're going to sign this paperwork. They could have done this 2 years ago. Yeah. I don't understand. It's like a joke.
Why are you taking so long?
And on top of that, like, oh, but don't worry. Like, moron who, like, leaked the story says, like, oh, but don't worry. It's accruing a considerable amount of interest. I'm like, oh, really? Is it because interest rates are high? Really?
Yeah.
So we shouldn't worry? Why don't you just leave it there forever then? I mean, I did. You know what? We're laughing about this, but they're real funny victims. Yeah, it's not funny.
Yeah, it's not funny at all. It's just an embarrassment.
Also not funny, Naby Keita has been suspended by Werder Bremen until the end of the season. Jules, not really surprising given what happened at the weekend, but what went wrong with this dude?
I mean, I don't know. Remember him, Liverpool fans? Naby Keita, that big signing that was so good at Leipzig and then just never showed up, never turned up at Liverpool. So when he found out, I mean, he hasn't played much for Werder this season anyway, 5 games. He's been injured a lot again. But when he found out that he was not going to start against Leipzig at the weekend. Against Leverkusen, sorry. At the weekend, he said, you know what? I'm not going to turn up. I'm not going to come. So he went home and never showed up again. Never, didn't go with the team when he was in the squad, obviously, on the bench.
So he missed out on all the Leverkusen title-winning celebrations.
Yeah, some of his mates. I don't know, would there be somebody that maybe he knows in that team?
Do you think anybody likes him?
I don't know. But now it's like, hang on, you just can't, you know, you can't not turn up for work, basically, because this is what he did. He just didn't turn up for work.
I hope 29 there years old. A story there, mental health, whatever, explains this. But I think this is one of the most vertical declines we've seen.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. In the last 5 years or so, crazy. Gab, your boy, Hernan Crespo and his Al Nain sides, having already beaten Cristiano Ronaldo, remember, and Al Nasser in the previous round, have not defeated Al Hilal 2 in the Asian Champions League, snapping their world record streak of 34 consecutive victories in all competitions. This was the first leg, of course. How big a deal this is?
So first of all, I think it's a big deal in that part of the world, in the sense, if you're Hernan Crespo, like you are, like the Saudi Pro League slayer. The Al Hilal record, look, I mean, you know, they beat the record run that was set by the New Saints, apparently. Yeah. But to win 34 games in a row,
it's pretty impressive.
And of course, then they're running away with the league in the Saudi Pro League. That's really impressive. Whoever you are, Jorge Jesus is their manager. They have Milinkovic-Savic. Yeah. They have my man Koulibaly.
Mitrovic, who could not play that game.
Who's suspended for this game, right? But shout out also to Sofiane Rahimi, who scored a hat-trick, the Moroccan striker, who I discovered is not Paris-born and bred.
No.
He's actually really from Morocco. Clayton Lima has resigned as coach of Santos women's team after protests against his return this weekend. Again, not surprising that he would have resigned.
And we're very happy that he did. I mean, to be fair, he should have never come back. And we saw the scenes when they play Corinthians. We mentioned that on Monday's show. he should have never been back.
We should explain what he did.
There's allegations against him of like sexual harassment and abuse and bullying, all of that. He was cleared after the clubs, after Santos had an investigation, so he was allowed to come back. They let him come back. And we saw the protest of the Corinthians players at the weekend before facing Santos. And now I think the public pressure, especially, was too much in Brazil that he decided to resign, which was the right thing to do.
Yeah, he decided to resign. I think the stain's going to be on him now forever. I do wonder, these things came out anonymously, and I understand why people spoke anonymously, maybe the environment or whatever. But now that you've seen how much support you've had, and how nobody's taken for Clayton Lima, I kind of wish that this had gone to a civil court so that we can actually establish what happened. Because what's going to happen now is Clayton Lima is tarred with this brush, but we've never had due process. We've never had a proper independent investigation. We just have the Santos one, which cleared him. Yeah. That's not fair either. So hopefully this encourages more people to come forward through the actual channels that they're supposed to come forward in.
Google Trends has revealed what the most searched team in the United States is, Gab, this season. Number one isn't that much of a surprise, but number two might be a surprise to some.
That's right. Who do you think number one is?
Well, considering there is
Manchester United? No.
No.
Inter Miami.
Of course, but considering they have the greatest player of all time in their ranks.
Right.
Who plays in the US.
Number two is Wrexham.
I was going to say Manchester United as a number two.
Wrexham, who of course were reportedly promoted last week into League One. Obviously, this has to do with the reality TV show. Look, when people have big debates about sort of the future of MLS and football in America, I think it's always really good to remind ourselves that there's 350 million people in the U.S. and a large, large, large percentage of those people are not football fans, not this variety of football.
Yes.
So when people look at this and say, oh, what do you mean? It's not Real Madrid. It's not, you know, whatever. No. This is the reality. Yeah. No, it's Inter Miami because of Lionel Messi. That's fine.
And that's fine. That's completely fine.
It tells you where they have to go.
Exactly.
Maybe a reflection. They've had a professional league now for nearly 30 years. Yeah. Maybe that should also get you thinking about what works, what doesn't work. It's not a knock on the game in the U.S. Again, it's an enormous country. It can be very successful without most people knowing. The fact that Wrexham's number two is also a reminder that Ryan Reynolds is pretty famous in addition to being very handsome. Erling Haaland has reportedly invested in a hair tie company called Bondet. They're Norwegian, and they make his favorite hair tie and, I suppose, hair tie adjacent products. Jules, I once had shaggier hair back when I had more hair, but never quite long enough for a hair tie, unless it was one of those weird-looking man buns, which look really loserish, and it's hard for most people to pull off.
Yeah.
I imagine you had long hair at one point. Did you ever use hair ties?
No. But I absolutely love this. I love the fact that he's investing in this company. I mean, at least he would get freebies all his life, I guess, right?
Hair ties are really expensive.
Well, I don't know if they are, but at least, you know, he can get the color he wants. He can design some, maybe.
But what I don't understand about hair ties, I mean, I this is so far out of my comfort zone. Please hit me up. Let me know on social media. But is it like, are there advancements in hair tie technology?
So it doesn't move during the game, maybe some are.
Could
like
it be
better.
That?
But also, you lose them a lot, right?
Yes.
My little girl, she loses a lot.
Yeah, that's why they sell, like, you know, you can have 100 hair ties for like 25 cents. I am genuinely curious in what sets Bondep apart, because you can't see his hair tie while he's wearing it. You know it's there.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have like a hair tie with a big gaudy Erling on it, you know, written in gold letters. I really want to know this.
Me too.
Bondep, other hair tie companies, please. Let us know. What makes your hair tie special?
I can't wait to see the advertising campaign and see how he, like, surely we'll have to be in it, right? It's his company too, so, you know.
Yeah.
Andriy Shevchenko is now president of the Ukrainian Football Federation Association, and he has a new plan, Gab, to reassure fans that the referees are fair and honest.
Okay, so this story
is a true story, right?
So this story is reported in The Athletic, and they link out to another story, which is all in Cyrillic, so I couldn't read it. I couldn't find the originals. There's direct quotes from Andriy Shevchenko in this.
Really?
I don't know if it's an April Fool and they got taken.
Come on,
But I just think it's so stupid
that
I'm willing to believe for now, until I hear otherwise, that it is an April Fool. Essentially, they want to have a – like, in Ukrainian league, there are accusations of corruptions, big teams get the call, blah, 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 all the time, right? So they want to introduce him and his pal, former Arsenal star Oleg Luzhny,
yes,
who's the head of the referees. They want to introduce a random draw for referees rather than assigning specific matches. Fair enough. And they apparently want to introduce lie detectors or polygraph tests to referees. Now, I'm going to believe this story is a hoax. If this story is true, they need to be ashamed of themselves. That this is not how it can work with referees.
Who do you support? Are you a Shakhtar supporter?
I don't know. Did you take money to favor Dynamo Kiev? I don't know. You know, did Zorya Luhansk buy you a new car? I don't. This is so bad. So bad that I want to refuse to believe.
Surely Sheva is too small for that. Come on.
I would hope so. I would really feel disappointed. Jules, that brings us to an end. But, you know, we've had a big Champions League midweek. It gets even bigger at the weekend. It's the Classico. It's the Milan Derby as well. Yeah. Inter can win the title.
PSG Lyon, City, Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final.
And, of course, the Liverpool and Arsenal in the Premier League title race. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.